Okay, we're in Parshas Lech Lecha, page 72 in the Stone Chumashim. Two lines from the end of the page. V'nasati l'chol zaracha acherecha. Story up to now, Hashem changed Avram's name to Avram, and there's a negative commandment. If you call somebody Avram and you call him Avram instead of Avraham, you're transgressing a negative commandment. We discussed why Yaakov was different, because Yaakov, Hashem himself, calls him right afterwards again Yaakov, and there's two levels, Yaakov and Yisrael. But once Avram became Avraham, that's what it stayed with. Okay? So now we're on Perek Yitzayim Pasuk Ches. And this is all part of the covenant, okay? The covenant between Hashem and the Jew. And as we said, the covenant is in the flesh, in the body of the person. Women have it from birth. Men have to be perfected by the imperfection that Hashem put into us. Okay, so he says now like this. Sati l'chol zaracha acherecha. Hashem said part of this covenant is that I am going to give you and to your children afterwards, it's Eretz Megurecha, the land where you lived, which is the land of Canaan, or kol Eretz Canaan, the entire land of Canaan, meaning all seven nations, la'chuzas elam, that for permanent inheritance. Now, Rashi explains, and Mefoshim will explain, it doesn't mean that they're going to live in Israel all the time, because the Jews were exiled. I mean, there's many hundreds and perhaps thousands of years that very few Jews lived in Eretz Yisrael. But he said, basically, even when they're not in the land, even when they're not living in the land is still theirs. But they're exiles from their own land. And that's what Hashem is promising. Vayisi lahem lalikim, and I will be for them and Hashem, meaning I'll be unto them. According to the Malbim, it means that Hashem will comply with the covenant that they should merit in their own right, their own deeds, to inherit the land. Later on in Chumash, the Torah says a very interesting expression about sinning and impurities. The Torah says, "V'leisakiha eretz eschem b'tamachem eisa." Literally means the land will not vomit. To speak incorrectly, will vomit you up, because that's the way the pasuk is defined. The word should not throw you up, vomit you out of the land. And Rashi quotes them from the Medrash. Eretz Yisrael is like a very fine stomach. If you eat if a very fine stomach eats non-refined food, they're going to throw up. That's what happens, because stomach can't handle it. So Hashem said, the land of Israel can only handle holiness, kedusha. It can't handle any impurities, any sins. So the second the Jews sin, the land throws them up, throws them out, and vomits them, so to speak, because there's chumashim here. Because the land can't handle it. So Hashem said, basically, you know something? It's up to you. Hashem says it's up to you. Okay, by the way, I wanted to mention it, but tonight's shiur is in the yard, tonight's yard of Bechiel Greenberg. So we're learning in his merit tonight. Hashem should have an aliyah. Okay, so this is the land of Canaan, which is permanent, and basically it's up to the Jewish people. Hashem says to the Jews, listen, it's up to your behavior. You behave, you stay in the land. You don't behave, you're forcing yourself to be thrown out of the land, because the land of Eretz Yisrael can't handle you. What do you want to say?
When it says everlasting possession,
yeah.
Is that also credit?
To the end of time. To the end of time. Eretz Yisrael belongs to the Jews. That's why, like, the Rebbe was constantly screaming, if it belongs to the Jewish people, no individual Jew even has a right to give it away. Biblical Israel, there's other parts that there's a definite issue, like Sinai Peninsula, all that. The Rebbe scheme, you can't give it back because of security. But regardless, Eretz Yisrael, the biblical boundaries of Eretz Yisrael, are not any personal person to be able to give away. It belongs to the nation of all generations until the end of time. So nobody has a right to give it away. And even when we're not living in it, like we just said, that's because you're exiled, but the land is Achuz HaSalem, the land is yours forever. Okay. Okay, Vayem Elokim Avram, Pasuk Tes. Vayem Elokim El Avram, page 74. Ve'ata is Brisi Tishmer, you have to keep my covenant. Meaning, what does Ve'ata mean? That this is connected to the previous verses. You yourselves have to, you, meaning the Jews have to circumcise themselves, and all future generations, like it says, Ve'ata is Brisi Tishmer, Ata v'zaracha acherecha l'chus ha'selam. You and your children for all the end of all times. Okay? Meaning, only the descendants of Avraham have the obligation of doing circumcision. Okay? Not anybody else. Now, l'chaira, the question is now, does that apply to Yishmael and his descendants? But the Mefarshim explained, the Gemara learns no, because it says, Hashem said, Ki bi Yitzchok yikari l'chazara, your descendants are only Yitzchok, not Yishmael. Yishmael is not counted on Avram's descendants. So therefore, they don't have an obligation of Bris Milah, but only Jewish descendants do, not them. Okay, Zeis Brisi Asher Tishmru Beini Uveinechem, this is the covenant that you should keep between me and you. In other words, the fact that Hashem says Zeis Eis Abris, some of the Parshim want to say Hashem actually showed him how to do it. He said, this Zeis means you're pointing to it. Marav Etzba, you're pointing to it. And you're saying, this is the covenant that Hashem made between me and you. So that means Hashem is showing it to him, so to speak. Between me and you and the children afterwards. Basically, the way the Mefarshim learn, Hashem, it's interesting, Hashem held the knife of the bris, and Avram did the cutting. But Hashem was holding on to the knife when he did it, this is what the Mefarshim explained. Hashem was holding on to the knife and Avram did the actual cut because of
himself.
Huh?
For himself.
Yeah, for himself. He did the others too. We'll soon see if somebody not circumcised is allowed to circumcise somebody who needs to be circumcised. And we're going to see soon from the Pasuk that you can't, in order to do a, here's a chumash, here. If you want to do a bris, you have to be circumcised yourself. Otherwise, you're not allowed to do a bris. We'll see that in a minute. Okay. Imol lachem kol zachar. You have to, every male has to circumcise themselves. Okay? Now, what does it mean? Imol lachem kol zachar. Who's the plural? It's interesting. The mitzvah bris is on the father. Then it says, imol lachem, which is plural. Who's the plural? So the Gemara learns out, the Mefarshim learns out, it means that if the person didn't do it, like we learned last week, if a person didn't do it as a kid, Bezdin has an obligation to do it. Once the kid becomes bar mitzvah, then it's their own obligation to do a bris. It's their own chiyuv to do a bris. But if the father didn't do it, like we said last week, the father's a goy, or whatever, the father died, or whatever the situation may be. So the mother does not have an obligation to do a bris. But the kid, the Bezdin, until the kid bar mitzvah, has an obligation to make sure the kid has a bris. And that's why it says lachem plural, besides simply meaning collectively, the Jewish people. But
so where do we learn that you don't have to get an invitation to go to a bris?
That you're not supposed to get an invitation? No, that's a whole different story. The reason why officially, it used to be the custom, today people do it anyway. Years ago, you didn't invite to a bris, you notified about a bris.
Right.
Why? Because there's a din that if it's a seudas mitzvah and you're invited, you must go. Otherwise, it's like somebody invites you for a mitzvah and you say, no, I'm sorry. So therefore, instead of inviting the person, you just notify him. You're not telling him to, you're not asking him to come to the bris. You're just telling him when the bris is.
He comes. Many?
Huh? Enochanami, but over there the question is not the same mitzvah as the bris milah is. But that's the purpose of why people do it. Okay. Now, let's just discuss for a minute. Okay. what's the purpose of doing a bris milah? Like we said last time, the Reb Sadie Goin explains, well, we didn't say it last, whatever. The Reb Sadie Goin explains that the whole purpose of a bris is to show a person is imperfect and a person has to perfect himself. Right? Hashem, because like we said, Hashem could have created us circumcised already. Why does he have to make us not, you know, uncircumcised and no, we have to circumcise? He could have made it not circumcised, that we don't need to have a bris. The answer is, Hashem says, I want you to realize and understand you are imperfect and you need to perfect yourself. Another thing is, Hashem wanted that there should be a unique relationship between Hashem and the Jew, not only in the neshama of the Jew, but even the body of the Jew. The body of the Jew is also connected to Hashem. Okay? Now, why did he do it in the reproductive organ of the person? So the Mefarshim say that he wanted to perfect him through the deed of human beings. Meaning, people have to perfect in their reproduction and their lusts, desires, all that. That's where you need to be perfected. Hashem could have made, you know, something on the finger that there's a foreskin going and then cut it off. I mean, it would also be the same concept of being perfect. But Hashem wanted in the place of lust and temptation and all that, the person should make this covenant with Hashem. Now there's another interesting medrash. The medrash says, Avraham Avinu sits by the doors of Gehenim and doesn't let in any Jews circumcised into Gehenim.
That's good.
Huh?
That's good.
Yeah, but I understand there's still plenty of Jews there. Like we said many times, if you want to go for the climate, you go to Gan Eden. You want to go for the company, you go to Gehenim. No, but it says, that's the bond, officially. Okay. Unmaltem, no, I'm sorry, Himolachem Kolzach, okay. Unmaltem Eis Sar Olaschem, okay. You should circumcise the meat, the flesh of your, Arla, okay. Will be a sign, a symbol and a sign between you and the Jew. Okay. Now there's a lot of, there's an interesting, the Rogatchev and other people talk about different aspects of a bris. One is that you have to do a bris. The other thing is that you shouldn't be uncircumcised. There's the active and the passive. There's a lot of things about that in halacha. But what aspect of it is it to do a bris? And the second thing is that you have to passively at least not have a bris. Now there's a very interesting Gemara in Sanhedrin. It says that years ago in David HaMelech's time, they wore towels and tefillin the whole day. You know, they wore tzitzis. I mean, they did a lot of mitzvahs. So the Gemara says that in Sanhedrin, David HaMelech was once in the bathhouse, you know, completely naked. And he was upset that he didn't have any mitzvahs on him. He didn't have any mitzvahs. He was barren of mitzvahs. Until he realized that he had a bris milah. And that's where, you know, the famous pasuk in Tehillim, in Kuf Yutes, we say it at a bris. Sas anechi al imrasecha. Sas anechi, I'm joyous about your commandment, like you found a great treasure. The Gemara says that refers to bris milah. You said before Tkiyas and Rosh Hashanah also. But that pasuk refers to, you know, we say, Yidu Maisa'era, V'simcha V'sasein. Sasein, the Gemara says, Zum milah. You know, it says, Yidu Maisa'era V'simcha. Eira Zuteira, Simcha Zuyamtif, Sasein, Zum milah, V'yikar, Elu Tfilin. The pasuk is in the Megillah. The Gemara says the Megillah. So one second. So, Sasein refers to bris milah. So David HaMelech realized that he had a bris, so he said, ah, I found a great treasure. I'm not naked and barren without any mitzvahs. So the Mefarshim, that's what the Gemara says. The Mefarshim asked, what do you mean? That day he put on tefillin, that day he wore tzitzis, that day he did learning Torah, he did a lot of other mitzvahs. He didn't have a bris that day. He had a bris who knows how many years before that. So why all of a sudden is he happy that he's having a bris, that he has a bris, and he should be happy that the same happened, that he wore tefillin that day. So from there they learn out, the commentators explain, there's a lot of interesting stuff with this, that bris mila is what's called pu'ula nimsheches. It's a continuous act. It's a continuous act. It's not that if somebody's 20 years old, they had a bris 20 years ago, and therefore that's done, finished. No. Every minute, it's like they're being circumcised.
So you get a mitzvah for every minute?
Yeah, well, I don't know how counting the mitzvahs, but it's considered pu'ula nimsheches, means a constant action. In fact, the interesting thing is, it says, the Rogatchev says this also, there's a difference between the hand tefillin and the head tefillin. If you notice, by the hand tefillin it says, ukshartam la'eis al yadecha, you have to tie him, you have to do an action. It doesn't say, put him on, it says, v'hoyu l'teitafeis b'ineinecha. It should be a sign between your eyes. Right? It doesn't say, put on the head tefillin. Nowhere does the Torah say, or in Shema, whatever it is, whatever the pasuk is, when it speaks about the head tefillin, it doesn't say you should put it on. It says it should be on. So the Mefarshim explained, but Rav Chava has a lot on this, by the way, that the difference is, by the hand tefillin, the mitzvah is putting them on. So it's ukshartam. You tied it, you put it on, you're done with the mitzvah. He learns that every minute you're wearing the head tefillin, it's another mitzvah. It's like passive. It should be as long as you're wearing that. In other words, the hand tefillin, the mitzvah is putting it on. The same thing, by the way, the whole story of the Chaim Brisky. Women are so perfect, they don't need nothing. If you believe that, I'll sell you a bridge. Now, the same thing, by the way, applies to Kedushin, believe it or not. The Ragachava proves in many different Gemaras, when a guy says, puts the ring in front of two witnesses, it's not a one-time deal and that's it. It's continuously doing Kedushin. It's continuously doing Kedushin. In fact, there's a story, somebody told it to Reb Chaim Brisker, Reb Chaim Brisker said, oh, Mazel Tov. So what's the Mazel Tov? You just got engaged, and we got Kedushin again. It's continuous. But Bris, according to many, many opinions, Bris is a continued pulling and Shechas, and that's what explained now the Gemara. Why was David HaMelech happy with the Bris that he had 30 years ago, and he wasn't happy with the tefillin he put on that morning? Because the Bris meal is continuously happening. What?
So that there are people who are still
there are in Eretz Yisrael, in America not, and it's in most circles is discouraged.
What?
Discouraged.
But it used to be 100 years ago, 200 years ago, people were...
The Alter Rebbe wore tefillin the whole day. Tzemach Tzedek was the first of the Rebbes not to wear tefillin the whole day. So you're talking about 150, 200 years ago. Until then, the Vilna Gaon wore tefillin. I mean, they wore tefillin the whole day. There are certain yeshivas, you go to Eretz Yisrael, you see certain yeshivas in Yerushalayim, the kids are wearing, running around wearing tefillin the whole day. The question is that appropriate, not appropriate, because when you're wearing tefillin, you have to behave properly. You can't burp, you can't pass gas, you have to have proper thoughts. I mean, that's why we don't wear tefillin the whole day today. Years ago, there were greater people, people that went to work, by the way, didn't wear tefillin the whole day even then. The tzaddikim, the Tamid HaChacham that learned the whole day, so they wore tefillin the whole day. The guys that are working with horses, didn't wear tefillin the whole day. That's what I'm saying, you can, so they didn't. But that's why it explains another thing, which is fundamental Yiddishkeit. We spoke about it once in Mincha Maariv. We were learning the mitzvah of tefillin. We said an interesting thing. Kids, before bar mitzvah, yeah? They wear tzitzis, they daven, they make brachas, they do lulav and esrog, you do all the mitzvahs, right? Why? Chinuch. educate the kids. But tefillin is the only thing they don't do before bar mitzvah.
They have those toy tefillin, I see.
Something. Yeah, okay. they're not kosher. So, so the question, why tefillin not? They do all the other mitzvahs in chinuch. Okay, our custom is 2 months before, other people have a minute only the day of the bar mitzvah, some start a week before, a month, different customs. But you don't start 3 years before, 5 years before. When a kid's 11 years old, you don't start wearing tefillin. Why not? So the answer is, tefillin are so holy, if you're not obligated in it, then you can't wear it. Because to behave properly in tefillin is extremely difficult. So male adults, the men over by mitzvah, have no choice. They have no choice, so that we wear it only for davening. Hopefully davening, you can control yourself a little bit. But after davening, you don't wear tefillin. Which explains another reason, another interesting thing. Not by the Sephardic so much, but the Ashkenazic Jews, women do most of the mitzvahs they're not obligated in. Right? They do lulav and nesed, they even make a bracha. But Sephardim don't, like the Rambam and the Beis Yosef. But the Ashkenazim follow the Rama and the Rashba and Taisis that say that women, even though they're not obligated in the mitzvah, are allowed to do it and they can make a bracha. So women bench lulav and they deep in the sukkah and they do a lot of mitzvahs, you know, and they even make a bracha. We don't find that women put on tefillin. Except the women off the wall in Israel, you know.
Off the wall?
Off the wall. They wear tefillin. But people, from women, don't wear tefillin. Why not? So hey, technically they can wear tzitzis. They can bench lulav and they eat in the sukkah. Why can't they wear tefillin? So again, it's the same explanation. If you're not, tefillin is so holy, if you're not obligated in it, Torah says then you can't do it. Finish. Those that are obligated have no choice, so to speak. But otherwise, you don't do it. And we come back to this. So this is what it says, that by Avraham Avinu, I mean, the bris is permanent, and it's a continuous act. Okay, now the Torah says like this. Uven Shmei Nasyamim, 8 days old, Yimo lochem kol zochel d'rei sechem. And this passage, by the way, is a number of very, very interesting things, both in halacha and in chassidus and musar and all that stuff. Okay, Torah over here says in this passage this. 8 days old, you have to do a bris. Right? Kol zochel. Yilid bayis, he that is born in the house, or miknas kesem mikol b'nei nechor, or on every stranger that is not your biological offspring, then it says you have to do the bris. So from there the Gemara learns an interesting thing. The Torah says if the person is not born in your house, I'll explain what that means, then the bris is not done the eighth day. The bris is done, let's say somebody buys a slave that was born a day old. Bought a slave, a goyish slave, not a yidir, a goyish slave. The din is, when a Jew buys a non-Jewish slave, Evet Kanani, okay, he has to circumcise him, he has to send him to the mikveh, and he's obligated in all the mitzvahs women have to keep. Okay? Then, when he's ever freed, for whatever, if he's ever freed, he becomes a full-fledged Jew.
Is it Kanani?
Huh?
Is it Evet Kanani?
What? Evet Kanani? Evet Kanani. Evet, he's a Jew, I mean, 100% Jew. Eved Kanani, this is what the Rambam, this is from the Gemara, but the Rambam brings it down, that an Eved, a goyish slave, which is bought by a Jewish guy, you have to circumcise him the day you bought him. But let's say you own a female slave, and then while she's working for you, she gives birth to a baby slave, then you do on the eighth day. But otherwise, if you acquire him, the day you acquire, whether the kid might be 12 years old, 11 days old, 15 days, the day you buy him, that's the day he has to do a bris. That's what the Torah is saying over here. Because the Torah only says, Shmei Nasyamim. Okay, so therefore like this. All these people, if it's born in the household, meaning like a slave in the household, so then you do it the bris on the eighth day. Otherwise, you do it that same day.
Rabbi,
yes.
As we know, many times a bris is postponed, right?
For health reasons, you mean it? Yeah.
So how is that included? Like, it says the eighth day, like, that it, okay, but Christmas, they didn't miss an opportunity versus other things that we know in Yiddishkeit, that if we don't do it, then it's, you know what I'm saying? Thank you.
First of all, according to the Rambam, when a bris is pushed off because of health reasons, I mean, Torah says you shouldn't do it. And you do a bris shalei bizmana, it is as if you did it in the right time. Number one. The Rambam explains why, if a baby is, today we call it yellow or sick or fever or whatever it may be. So the Rambam writes, that is the analogy of, no, not this. He says like this, a bris you could always do. Bringing back a life, you can never do. So if there's any doubt, a bris you could do later, but you can, if the guy, God forbid, the muscle, another case where it says in Allah, in the Torah, well, in Allah, that you don't do a bris, a kid, somebody had two brothers that died because of circumcision. So Mesa Echav Machmas Mila, the two brothers died already from circumcision. The din is that kid is not allowed to be circumcised. Huh? Yeah, whatever, yeah. Yeah. Because they bleed, whatever it may be, and they died. So then the din is the kid never needs a bris. But the vart is that when the bris is done, in fact, the Rebbe happened to be super strict with the concept of not doing a bris if there's any even slight doubt of any health issues. And there's a whole issue. There's a lot of different bialim have different what's called Kabbalah. They have different traditions that they follow. Some bialim will not do a bris if a kid's over 10, jaundice. Okay? The Billy Rubin comes, right? You know what I mean? The kid's yellow.
Little.
Huh?
Billy Rubin has
jaundice.
Jaundice.
The kid's yellow. So you take a Billy Rubin count, it's a trick, a little thing, and they tell you right away.
It's a blood test.
Huh? It's a blood test, yeah. So most Maryland will not do a bris if the kid's over 10. They'll wait until the kid goes back to 10. Some Maryland, if the kid is 16, not only won't they do the bris, they'll wait until the kid becomes 10, and they'll wait a week, and then do the bris. Because in Shulchan Aruch and Rambam, we've done all these dinim, obviously. In Shulchan Aruch it says that a kid who is taka sick, you need to wait a week after he got healthy. So question, what is jaundice? Is jaundice an illness? Or some moilim and some rabbonim, a lot of rabbonim in fact say, that they use the number 16 usually. Not everybody, but they say if the kid's 16, that's called already a chola. And the din of a chola is that you have to wait a week after he becomes healthy. Now healthy means it goes down to 10. That's the normal color. But then you have to wait a week afterwards. If a kid is in the hospital, sometimes they take you to NICU right afterwards. Depending, sometimes a kid can have a little thing. They'll do give him antibiotics. Not preventives. Preventive antibiotics is different. But if sometimes they'll give me antibiotics, they have to wait a week until the kid's off the antibiotics and then they can do the bris. I had a friend, this is going back a long time ago, he had a kid, a boy, and I don't remember what this, I don't remember if it was yellow, I don't remember what the story is. The Rav in New York, in Crown Heights, the Rav of the community, said do the bris. An expert moyel, a real good moyel, said do the bris. A so-so moyel said, no, don't do the bris. So you got a big rub that said yes, the expert moyel said yes, and this little guy, you know, not the very great moyel, he said no. So he didn't know what to do, he wrote to the rabbi, he wrote, this guy said this, the rabbi said this, what do I do? And the Rebbe answers, it's known that anytime there's a doubt of pikuach nefesh, you wait. And the Rebbe wrote, asur la'asei sabris. The Rebbe, it's forbidden to do the bris now. That's what the Rebbe answered him. I know it's a friend of mine. I know that this was the story. The Rebbe said, you're not allowed to do the bris. That means even though the Rav said you could, and you know how to learn that, Rav. And the expert Moel said, yeah, some guy cast a doubt into it. So the Rebbe said, then it's a doubt. You don't do it. Somebody told me, again, you know, halacha is halacha. By the way, once a kid, even if its bris is pushed off, for whatever reason is, and let's say Friday, well, bris that's not on time, you can't do on Shabbos. Right? That's a given.
What?
Caesarean birth is not on Shabbos, the bris. And if once a bris is pushed off, you're not allowed to do it on Shabbos. So, so what happens if the kid's ready to do a bris Friday? The Mel says, you know what? It's delayed already. And the Mel says, Friday afternoon you could do the bris. It depends. No, let's wait till Sunday. Let's wait till Sunday. It's, you know, more convenient. Halachically, you're not allowed to push it off till Sunday. Every day you push off a bris from the time the kid is able to do it, you're transgressing a positive mitzvah, not from here, because this is before Matan Torah. Gemara says any mitzvahs we learn before Matan Torah, it has to be repeated after Matan Torah, because you don't learn any halacha from before Matan Torah. In Parshat Tazria it says Ishak Yisazria V'yolda Zachar, and then it says V'yei Mashmini Yimo B'sar Olasi. So it's a positive mitzvah to do a bris on the eighth day, right? Which means not avikimedical than Yenala to do the bris. But I'm saying it's time to push off a bris is, and you transgress not a negative commandment, but if you're transgressing every day a positive mitzvah. Same with Pinyin HaBen, by the way. If the kid on the 31st day, it's not Shabbos, you have to do a Pinyin HaBen. You say, no, it's, you know, it's, let's wait till Sunday. More people will come. Every day you don't do a Pinyin HaBen, you're transgressing a positive mitzvah to Taylor. Taylor says, a month old, you have to redeem the kid. You're going to do longer, then that's it. Okay, now, what's the Indian of 8 days? Okay, in that time. What's the Indian of 8 days as a bris? Why did Hashem say to do a bris on 8 days? And also, the question is, just think about it, why halachically does a bris push off Shabbos? Right? The bris is pushing, if it's on time, right? Not cesarean, natural birth, the kid's healthy, born on Shabbos, the bris is on Shabbos. Why? Why Shabbos lechay is so important? Why does bris milah push off Shabbos? So what's the answer? The answer is very simple. Bris is on the eighth day. Shabbos is the seventh day. By the way, it says in the chinuch, those people that explain the reason for the mitzvahs, they say a kid needs a Shabbos to be alive a Shabbos before the bris. So therefore, if it's the eighth day, you always have at least one Shabbos. If the kid one Shabbos, then you have a second. But you need one Shabbos for the kid to have Kedushas Shabbos before he's able to do a bris. But the point is like this. What's the difference between 7 and 8? So you know the Kol Yoker beginning of Pashas, the Yibayim and Mashmini, the Kol Yoker writes, everybody writes, it's all over the place. 7 represents time. 8 represents the supernatural. That's why the Kol Yoker said, Vayibayim HaShmini, Motziin Yashmini. Kol Yoker elaborates the whole thing and says, 7 is the concept of nature, 7 days of the week, time and place. 8 represents the supernatural. That's why it's brought down in Siddush Sfarim. Oz Yashem Meisha, Oz Zayin, Aleph Zayin, Aleph Zayin is 8. The Aleph higher than the Zion, meaning number 8, which is higher than 7. 7 symbolizes time. 8 represents the supernatural. Because the 8th day of the week is Sunday again. It's not the 8th day of the week. Time is divisible by 7. That's it. 8, the number 8 represents the supernatural. Therefore, the Kol Yoker explains, the Menorah and the Beis HaMikdash had 7 branches. The harp in the Beis HaMikdash had seven, no, that harp that they played, had seven strings, or whatever you call them. And Hanukkah represents eight. The number eight represents the supernatural. And the Gemara says, Kiyosho, Yemaisa Mashiach, is going to be Shmeinim Mimim. The harp of Mashiach's time is going to have eight. What's the difference between, again, who cares, seven, eight, they're the same music. The point is, seven represents time, eight represents the supernatural. In this respect, Bismillah is even greater than the level of Shabbos. Shabbos is the level seven. Bismillah represents eight. So therefore, the concept of Bismillah, in fact, it says another thing. It's a pasuk later on, all the way at the end of Chumash. Leiba shamayim hi, Torah is not in the heaven. Leimer miyala lano hashamayim. Here. In Parshas Nitzavim, if you look on page 1092, if you want. Okay? On page 1092, all the way on top. The Patsuk Sikya Mitzvah Zetz Shanechim Mitzav Rayim. The Mitzvah I'm commanding you today. Lein Neflesi Necho. It's not hidden from you. It's not distant. Lei Bashamayim Hi. It's not in heaven. To say, Mi Yale Lono Hashamayimo. Then who's going to go up to the heaven to take it? Yeah? That's what the Patsuk says. So Rashi says, because if it would be in the heaven, we'd have to get ladders and go up to that. But these words, Mi yale lonu hashamayimo. If you look at the first letters of each word, mi yale lonu hashamayimo is mila. Right? Mi is a mem, yale is a yud, lonu is a lamed, and hey is a shamayim. Yeah? Look at the last letters of the words, the same four words. Yud ke, vav ke. Yeah? Yes? Okay, so Mila is the first letters of those four words. And Yutke Vavke is the last letters of the four words. Now, we all know, Seichel dictation, that's also in Teira. Rasha Tevis are on a higher level than Safa Tevis, right? Than the last letters. The beginning letters are beginning, and this is end. So obviously, beginning is better than end. So now, the Rebbe explains in Teira Od, there's a pasuk on the Avraham Avinu's bris. He explains a mime over there. It's a short mime that everybody says at the Chabad, and they all say it at the bris. So the Alter Rebbe explains that the concept of Mila is even greater than the name of Yudke Vavke. Why? Because again, Yudke Vavke represents Mahava Creator. That's the end letters of Miyala, but the first letters is Mila, it's even higher than the name of Yud Kei Vav Kei. Like we learned, Ato is higher than Hashem and higher than Elokeinu, right? You is Ato or Neichi is you nameless, meaning you're above the concept of a name, meaning the essence of the person. So Mila is at a very lofty level, and therefore the Torah says you need to do it on the eighth day, because it represents the level higher than nature. And that's why it pushes off Shabbos. Because it's a greater level, the greater Kedusha than Shabbos.
Right, did Aaron Arishan have a brief meal? Or did
he was born, he was created circumcised.
But Moshe,
yeah. But by the way, we're going to see later when it says, Himer Lochem Kol Zachar, yeah? Every male, meaning even if somebody's born circumcised,
You still have to do
what's called a toughest dambris. You have to prick that area a little bit and make a little bit of bloodletting. Or somebody, let's say, converts. But they already had a circumcision. So you can't circumcise them. You circumcise already. So then you have to do what's called a toughest dambris. But every Jew, even somebody who's born circumcised, needs to do a toughest dambris. It's not they're off the hook. They still have to do something. Okay, next. So it sounds like this. Benchmen of Pasikud Beis again. Benchmen of Yomim, 8 days old. Yimol, it should be circumcised by the father. Those that are born in the house of a maidservant, like we said before, living in the house. Umiknas kasev mikol ben nechor, if you buy a stranger which is not your offspring. Himol yimol yelid beischa, you have to circumcise those that are born in your house. Or miknas kaspecho, or those that you acquire. Okay? Now, here the Torah doesn't say again 8 days old. So there, from there, the Gemara learns out, Rashi says, by the way, Rashi said, you learn out from there that you buy a slave, the day you buy him, you have to do a bris, even if he's 1 day old. If you bought him 1 day old. Okay, now, what's this double expression? Himol yimol. It's a double expression, right? You should say himol kol zachar, or whatever. So there's a lot of halachas that the Gemara learns out from this. Number one, that what happens if somebody was circumcised and it grew back?
Possible?
Everything's possible.
That's true.
Well, there's a concept, meaning he pulls on this thing that they should be try to create a covering again. He's embarrassed of the bris. That's, it's called a mefer brisa shel Avraham Avinu.
That's, he did himself.
Yeah, but I'm saying if it grew back, yeah, he has to do it again, even up to 100 times. Yimo, the double expression, we learn out shaleich to shalach esaim. When it says double expression, means even 100 times. Next is another interesting halacha. If a guy does a bris, not kosher.
No?
Nope. Because it says himo yimo. So the Gemara learns from here, interesting. Himo, one who is circumcised, yimo could circumcise.
So what the boy is?
No, but he's not obligated in this circumcision. From here we also learn himo yimo. The Gemara also learned out, Yerushalmi, that even if it's born circumcised, you still need to do a bris. These are all extra things which I learned from the extra expression. Obviously, like we said also before, based on this Yerushalmi says, based on this pasuk, that a Jew who's not circumcised cannot circumcise a Jew. Because the Torah says, himo yimo. If you're circumcised, you can circumcise. If you're not, you can't.
You said before that women are considered circumcised.
That for Tzipora did the bris. Yeah. Alpidin, if a woman did a bris, it's kosher. Because women are part of the mitzvah. She is considered circumcised.
Jewish
woman. Huh?
A Jewish woman.
Yeah, Jewish woman, obviously. Well, that's what Tzipora did. With Moshe Rabbeinu, the second baby.
That was before the Torah was given a Torah.
Yeah, but nevertheless, the Gemara learns out from there that it's still kosher.
Rabbi,
but
Moshe Rabbeinu escaped from Egypt. Was he ever reunited with his parents? Did he ever see his parents again after that?
When they were back in Egypt.
He was still alive and he was pretty
sure
from Yitro or anything.
Yeah. In fact, the Medrash says, Amram and Yocheved, by Matan Torah, had to divorce.
Divorce?
Yeah. Because it was a niece with an uncle, an aunt with a nephew is not allowed to get married. It's biblically forbidden. So before Matan Torah was allowed. Right? So once Matan Torah came, you know, an aunt cannot marry a nephew. Meshe took Amram took Yocheved Doidasei, his aunt. So by Matan Torah they divorced. Some opinions say they both remarried, and some Mefarshim say that, you know, those two guys, Eldad and Medad, when Hashem told him pick 70 elders and there were 72, and he said Eldad and Medad Misnavim B'Machana. So Mefarshim over there in that parsha say that Eldad Umeidod, Eldod, Meidod, was either Amram or Yocheved's kids. So they're Meshe Rabbeinu, Eldod and Meidod were Meshe Rabbeinu's half brothers. Because before Matan Torah, at Matan Torah, Amram and Yocheved divorced. But they're alive. I mean, they're it's alive. Sure.
Then they get a
risk
right after?
Right after what? No, that is the conversion process. The conversion process for a goy become a guy becoming a Jew is three parts. Mila, Tvila, and Korban. Mila, circumcision. Or if they're circumcised, you know, letting a tofes dambis. They have to go to the mikvah in front of a bezdin, and the third, they have to bring a carpet. Well, therefore, halacha says, Rambam brings this down, halacha says it. Nowadays, the third level does not hinder the conversion. Both of them, mila and tefila, hinder the kedusha. If a guy had a bris with no mikvah, he's not a Jew. He had mikvah without a bris, he's not a Jew. If you do mila and tefila, so then you're 100% Jew. You have an obligation to bring a korban. So Mashiach comes, all the gedim of all the generations are lined up bringing korbanos. Like all the women that have babies and all the other people that have to bring a million sin offerings. And we're going to be very busy then, man. There'll be lines around the country. Around the world, yeah. No, but the Milan Tfila is part of the... That is the process of gedis. So first you have to do mila, you can't do mikveh first. First you have to do mila, and then you do tvila, and when they come out of the mikveh, and the bezdin, if it's a male, they watch it, if it's a female, they only watch the head go under, they stand off at the side, they watch the head go under the water, and that's what makes them a Jew. And these dinim, by the way, excuse me, the dinim of all these gates, they learned out from Matan Taylor. It's all from Matan Taylor. They had to go to the mikveh, and there was a korbanos that they had to bring afterward. And from the story of Rus, we learn out a lot of dinim of gedus. But the main gedus of the Jewish people happened in Matan Torah. And the Rambam says, the Matan Torah, that mila, tefila, and korban.
So if the father is Jewish, and the mother wasn't Jewish, and they did the circumcision, and then the child converted...
So he has to do a tofes dambris. You have to let a little bit of blood. If you go to the mikveh. Now, if it's a kid converting, let's say parents, let's speak about from couples, okay? They adopt a child. Say you adopt a child, a year old. Yeah? A boy. So they have to give him a bris. He has to go to the mikveh. Kind of a bezdin. Even if it's a baby, by the way, they wait until the baby is able to be dunked in the water.
Yeah,
one year old. No, a girl, I'm saying.
Oh, girl.
A girl and boy, same thing. Okay. A girl doesn't have a bris. Oh. I was once at a Gators that they did, I think it was a 6-week-old girl. Somebody adopted. They adopted a baby from birth. But they couldn't put the kid in the mikveh right away because too young. So they wait until, I think it's 6 weeks or so. And then... the father or the mother hold the baby, they go into the water, they let go, you know, let go for a second, and that the kid is, that makes the kid a get. The Gemara says, Amar Abuna get cotton, my bila na yisrael, that was Bezdin. Bezdin converts the kid. Then, the difference is, I know we're off topic, what else is there? When the kid becomes bar bas mitzvah, there's also another complicated halacha issue. How does it exactly work? But a kid that became converted as a minor under bar bas mitzvah, the day they become bar bas mitzvah, the kid could say, "I'm not interested in being a Jew," and he's not. If that day he says, "I like being a Jewish," or what the parents would do with it, say, "Isn't it nice being a Jew? You have a bar mitzvah. Isn't it nice being a?" Kid says, "Yes," and then a full fledged Jew. And if the next day decide no, tough luck, you're Jewish. By the way, the Rambam says even about an Eved, but Eved Kanani, the Rambam quotes from the Gemara, that an Eved Kanani that you buy, so the din is, you have to table him and give him to bring him to the mikveh. What happens if the guy refuses to do a bris? He's a slave. He's an adult guy. He says, "I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it." He refuses. So the Rambam says, the Gemari try to deal with it in 12 months to convince him to do the bris. And if not, gotta let him go. He's not interested in converting. The Gemara tells a story. Rabbi Lazar, the famous Rabbi Lazar, once came into a shul with his goyish slave. In those days, everybody had goyish slaves, right? Everybody. He came into a shul with a goyish slave of his, who already did Mila and Tvila, but he wasn't a full-fledged Jew until he's freed. So Rabbi Lazar came into a shul, there were only 9 people. And he wanted to daven with a minyan, he freed a slave, which made him a full-fledged Jew, and they had a minyan. And then before the Rishonim talk, even though there's a mitzvah, la'elam b'am tavaydu, that they have to work for you forever, positive mitzvah, they have to work for you forever, and they answer, it's not really a mitzvah, it's not, and they ask a different question. Because even when you free the Eved, he has to go to mikveh again. So l'cheir, he didn't go to mikveh. So the answer is, he's still Jewish, he just has to go to the mikveh, but he's still Jewish. And the bottom line is, that's how important davening with a minyan was. He was even willing to free a slave just to have a minyan, to be able to daven with a minyan.
You free yourself forever?
Yeah, once you free me, he's free.
Temporary freedom.
You can't buy it back.
No. What? No, now that you free me, he's a full-fledged Jew.
Yeah.
It's a mechuyav mitzvah.
Why is it so important that we're a slave?
What?
But why is it so important that a slave gets a balance?
Because he's becoming a partial Jew. As a slave, I know women don't like this, but the Mishnah always speaks about noshim va'avodim. Women and slaves. It's not God forbid comparing women to slaves. But in halacha and mitzvahs, slaves, goyisha slaves, are obligated in the same mitzvahs women are. All negative mitzvahs, any mitzvah not connected to positive, not connected to that. When the eved becomes free, then he's a full-fledged Jew.
I heard once, that's why the order of the
bracha
was
here, Shlosani
Eved,
Shlosani
Isha.
Because
a woman has more mitzvahs
than the Eved. Not more mitzvahs, she's born a Jew, and that's just the right. Okay, then it says like this, Pasuk Yudalit. The Adel Zachar, an uncircumcised male, and here the Gemara learns out an interesting thing, Rashi quotes it from the Gemara. Why does the Torah say Oral Zachar? When it teaches us that where is the place of the bris? The place that differentiates men and women. Like we said before, how do you know you do a bris mila, where we do a bris mila? Maybe you do it on the finger, maybe you do it on the stomach, I don't know. Where do we learn out that you do it on the male organ? So the Gemara learns it out from this pasuk. V'Oral Zachar. Okay, it could have said va'arel ashaliyimol. It's beside Allah. Say v'nichrasan. Why did it say arel zachar? Well, Avi is still talking about males. So the answer is the Gemara learns out from it. The Torah is teaching us where you do the bris on the part of the body that differentiates male and female. Okay. Now, what does that mean? If you don't do the bris, v'nichrasan nefesh shahimi amera, that soul will be cut off. Now, the thing is like this. As a kid, the father has to do the bris. Once the kid's bar mitzvah, he has to do the bris. Right? We said that before. But it says, the nichrasa nefesh shehim me'ameha, the Gemara learns out from here, that means when he reaches the age of 20. 20. Because Hashem doesn't punish anybody with karis, you know, the punishment that you die early, before 20. So therefore, the fact that the Torah says v'nichrasa nefesh shehim me'ameha, okay, when he's still a minor, he's not liable, but once he reaches the age of 20, and he doesn't do a bris, v'nichrasa. The question is only...
I thought that was bad mitzvah and bas mitzvah.
To what? Not punishment from heaven. Punishment of the courts is from bar and bas mitzvah. Punishment of kares and misa b'dei shemayim, the Gemara learns out, is only from the pasuk, only from the age of 20.
You say punishment, of course, could it be like extorting?
If a 15-year-old kid, yeah, openly desecrated Shabbos, was warned with 2 Eidim in the works, yeah, Besson's going to give him skila. But Karis, he's not going to get. Before 20.
It's usually skila
Right, it is stricter. But what happens if a 15-year-old kid desecrated Shabbos openly b'mezid, but he wasn't warned?
He wasn't warned?
Warned by Edom. So then the punishment is kares. But at 15, he's not going to get kares. When he's 20, Hashem will punish him for the aveid he did when he was 15. Okay.